here. Now, broadcasting from the underground command post, deep in the bowels of a hidden bunker, somewhere under the brick and steel of a nondescript building, we've once again made contact with our leader, Mark Levin.
Hello, everybody. Mark Levin here. Our number, 877-381-3811, 877-381-3811. Lots going on out there, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, in the next segment, I don't normally do this in the first hour, but I want to jump right on top of it. One of the foremost experts, an old friend of mine, a professor, senior fellow at the Claremont Institute in California, but an expert on the 14th Amendment and birthright citizenship. He will be here, and we will go over this. And I will be on Hannity TV tonight on the Fox News channel discussing this. Because it's time to go on offense. Now, the fact of the matter is, whatever somebody wants the 14th Amendment to say, whatever policy somebody may want when it comes to birthright citizenship, it does not exist in the 14th Amendment for the children of illegal aliens. The Supreme Court has never ruled that it does, ever. And even if it did, we've talked about Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4, where Congress has plenary power to determine who can be a naturalized citizen. And Congress has done it before. It did it in the 1920s. I believe it was 1923 with Native Americans who initially were excluded under the 14th Amendment because they had, it was thought, an allegiance to their tribal nations. And rather than use all the arguments that I know Professor Earler is going to make because he's written so extensively about this, we'll wait for him in the next segment. But it's, ladies and gentlemen, it's not even a close call. It's not even a close call. When you see these phony slip and fall lawyers on cable TV, or you listen to these demagogic politicians, or the poor Republicans who just don't want to be on the wrong side of this thing, when you listen to them, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And Congress has plenary power. That means the broadest possible power under the Constitution. Going forward, prospectively, to pass a statute, if it wishes, and say, no, no more birthright citizenship for illegal alien children. Period. That word jurisdiction, you'll know that when you hear somebody say jurisdiction means the geographic United States, that they don't know what they're talking about, that they're imbecilic, and they're just spewing. Just because somebody has Esquire after their name doesn't mean they know what the hell they're talking about. But I do. When it comes to the Constitution. And when it comes to this matter. And Congress has explicit power. A grant under the Constitution. Among the three branches, it has explicit power to make these decisions, not the Supreme Court by abusing its implied judicial review power, but Congress by its explicit power has the final say. And it's about damn time Congress did something. But my raising my voice won't make that happen, now will it? Well, the president will just veto it. Who cares? Do the right thing. Make the case and do it over and over and over again. Wear them down. Just as they wear us down, wear them down. And by the way, I've heard it said, well, if we want the 14th Amendment to be changed, we have to amend the Constitution. We don't have to amend a damn thing. The 14th Amendment says exactly what I said it says. It does exactly what I said it does. Let them amend the Constitution if they want to change it. Let them go through the process, which they never will, because they just want to find some activist federal judge or appellate court or a majority on the Supreme Court to impose their will on the American people. And I've had about a damn enough of that too. Which is exactly why I proposed in the Liberty Amendments empowering 3/5 of the state legislatures within a 24-month, a 2-year period of a majority decision by the Supreme Court to nullify it. Because if justices are going to act like legislators, and if it only takes one of them, five majority, but one to swing them one way or the other, that is an oligopoly. That is not, or an oligarchy. That is not a representative republic. And that's not the way a judiciary is supposed to function. So we will have Professor Earler on the program, and he is a fascinating man. He's a very interesting man. And there are other things going on. Now we know why they hid these side agreements on the deal with the Islamo-Nazis in Tehran. Now we know why. It's such a joke. It's so pathetic. Any senator, any congressman who announces for this deal is clearly throwing in with the Islamo-Nazis in Tehran. No question about it. And clearly voting against the national security of the United States of America. Mark, you're so harsh. I'm not harsh in the least. The Associated Press, Vienna, Iran, in an unusual arrangement, will be allowed to use its own experts to inspect a site it allegedly used to develop nuclear arms under a secret agreement with the UN agency that normally carries out such work, according to a document seen by the AP. In other words, this is so incredibly unbelievable that somebody leaked the secret side deal, one of them, to the biggest wire service, the biggest news wire service in the world, and said, can you believe this? The Iranians are going to be in charge of inspecting their own sites. And we're supposed to take this deal seriously? You see what this does? There is no deal. There's just paper. We can't call this a deal. There's no deal. The Iranians won everything. Where did they lose? What did we gain? Anywhere. Well, 10 years. 10 years is nothing. The revelation, writes the Associated Press, is sure to roil American and Israeli critics of the main Iran deal signed by the U.S., Iran, and five world powers in July. Those critics have complained that the deal is built on trust of the Iranians, a claim the U.S. has denied. Well, how can they deny this? Hey, look, Islamos, will you please check your site, that one site, you know, the one where you build the nukes? Parchin, the Parchin nuclear site. Would you do us a favor and check it out and see if you're violating the deal?
Absolutely, we'll check it out. Absolutely. Debt to America. Debt to America. Debt to the Jews. Debt to the Jews. Yes, we check it out. Yes.
And they checked it out, and everything is just fine. Oh, okay. Thank you. Now, who the hell can vote for something like this? Notice they kept that secret from us as long as they could. Somebody had to leak it. The investigation of the Parchin nuclear site by the International Atomic Energy Agency is linked to a broader probe of allegations that Iran has worked on atomic weapons. That investigation, in part, is part of the overarching nuclear deal. The Parchin deal is a separate side agreement worked out between the UN's IAEA in Iran, the United States, and five other world powers that signed the deal. We're not party to this agreement, but we're briefed on it by the IAEA, endorsed it as part of the larger package. So John Kerry, Barack Obama, and the other goofballs and knuckleheads just surrendered everything to the Islamo-Nazi regime in Iran. I'm not done with this. This is too important to do a hit and run. But when we come back, we're scheduled to have Professor Edward Earler, senior fellow at the Claremont Institute, to give us the final, that is the definitive comment, on so-called birthright citizenship for illegal aliens. I'll be right back.
Mark Levin.
Professor Edward Earler, senior fellow at the Claremont Institute and other places. How are you, sir?
Fine, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm good. Now, we go back quite a ways when I was a Lincoln Fellow at the Claremont Institute. I used to call you Ed.
You did indeed. You can still do so.
I can still do so. I was not a bad student. Now, was I?
You were an excellent student.
I just need everybody to know that. Now, Professor Erler, Ed, this birthright citizenship issue has come up again, and it amazes me. It amazes me that people who push this policy for birthright citizenship for illegal alien babies pretend that the Constitution's on their side and that we have to amend the Constitution to say what it actually says. Would you briefly explain what's going on here?
Well, the Constitution is not on their side. It has never been on their side, and it doesn't require a constitutional amendment to end birthright citizenship. I think the framers of the 14th Amendment would be astounded at the low level of the debate that's taking place today. If you just look at the language of the 14th Amendment, all persons born or naturalized and subject to the jurisdiction of the United States are citizens of the United States. So you have, there are two requirements. You have to be born or naturalized, but you must also be subject to the jurisdiction.
Let me stop you right there. Let me stop you right there.
Yes.
I just want to take it step by step.
Yes.
Is it not true if an illegal alien baby were to be an immediate American citizen, that's all we would need is the front part of that section, correct?
Exactly right.
Which says anybody born in the United States, could be a citizen or naturalized. Great. Okay, why do we need any more?
That's exactly right. If you say that all persons born here are automatically citizens, then you have rendered the jurisdiction clause of the Constitution superfluous. If the framers had meant that everybody born here is automatically a citizen, they would have left out the jurisdiction clause. And so you've automatically amended the Constitution by saying that anyone born here is automatically a citizen.
Has the Supreme Court ever ruled that?
No, never.
Never.
Been a ruling by the Supreme Court that says that children of illegal aliens born in the United States are citizens of the United States. There's never been a case on point.
Now let's take this next section, which is crucially important, in which you are the expert as far as I'm concerned. Subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. We have a lot of slip and fall lawyers running around professing to know that means the geographic, territories of the United States. Now, that can't possibly mean that, can it?
Well, most people say that it means that you're just subject to the courts of the United States or subject to the laws of the United States. But what the framers of the 14th Amendment said, it means owing allegiance to the United States, owing exclusive allegiance. One of the interesting things that came up in debate was that Jacob Howard, who was a senator from Michigan, who was the author of the Citizenship Clause, he was asked whether the 14th Amendment would make Indians citizens of the United States, and he said no. They were born in the United States, he said, but they were not subject to the jurisdiction because they owed allegiance to their tribes and not to the United States. And so what it means to owe allegiance is not to be subject to the laws of the United States, but it means to owe allegiance, exclusive allegiance to the United States. And I submit to you that those people who come to the United States breaking the laws of the United States are not demonstrating allegiance to the United States or allegiance to the laws of the United States. And it would just be incredible to believe that the framers of the 14th Amendment would confer the boon of citizenship upon the children of illegal immigrants when they said explicitly that that boon was not to be conferred upon the children of native persons.
And so I guess the question is, how did we get from that to where we are today? Where people insist, no. If somebody's born here in the United States of illegal alien parents or an illegal alien mother, then they have automatic citizenship. Who says? What, the State Department?
As nearly as I can figure it out, it must have been a decision somewhere along the line in the State Department. The only Supreme Court case that we have that is even close is a case called Wong Kim Ark in 1898, where the child of a born in the United States of legal immigrant parents was declared to be a citizen of the United States. But nowhere has a Supreme Court decision ruled that children of illegal immigrants are citizens of the United States. So I cannot figure out myself, and I've tried to my best, where the decision to make children of illegal immigrants was decided.
But it's not in the Constitution. It's not in the history of the amendment. It's not in a Supreme Court decision, so it must have been burped out of the bureaucracy somewhere, right?
That's my belief, yes. Now, the other thing about whether or not it would require a constitutional amendment, I think that that is simply not the case for this reason. In 1870, this was 2 years after the 14th Amendment was ratified, the Senate asked the Senate Judiciary Committee to do a study about the status of American Indians. And the Judiciary Committee issued a report that said, it is very, very clear that the amendment did not intend to make citizens out of American Indians, that the primary purpose of the 14th Amendment was to settle the citizenship of the newly freed slaves.
Let me stop you there. Why did they need to settle the citizenship, just for historic purposes?
Yes.
Why did they need to settle that? Because the states were a problem there, weren't they?
Yes, because the states... prior to the Civil War, state citizenship was primary. Every citizen of a state, for all practical purposes, was considered to be a citizen of the United States. So that in order to keep the states from denying citizenship to the newly freed states, the newly freed slaves, the citizenship status had to be reversed. Federal citizenship had to come first, state citizenship was derivative from federal citizenship.
So this was one of three what we call civil rights amendments. And by the way, who had to ratify these amendments?
Well, the states.
So the states are imposing upon themselves. It's quintessential federalism for people that are, damn the federal government. Well, no. The states did this.
Exactly right. But my point was this. After the 14th Amendment was ratified, the Congress began to pass pieces of legislation inviting various Indian tribes, or extending offers of citizenship to members of various citizen Indian tribes.
Now, before you go on, Professor, that music means I have a hard break. Don't leave. If you would, I'd like to hold you over. Professor Edward Erler, one of the top experts on many issues, but this one in particular, birthright citizenship, so-called, under the 14th Amendment. Don't go away, folks. Don't go away, Professor. I'm not going away either, but I'll be right back.
This is the nation's town hall meeting. And you can join in at 877-381-3811.
We do things a little differently on this program. We dig deeply. I think that's why so many of you like my books. And that's why we have so few guests. We only bring on the best. And we have one of them now, Professor Edward Erler, expert on many things constitutional and political, including the 14th Amendment and the so-called birthright citizenship clause. Professor, you were talking about no amendment needed. The amendment says what it says. Go right ahead.
Well, my point was that American Indians were not included in the jurisdiction, within the jurisdiction of the United States, according to the 14th Amendment as originally passed. Congress passed several pieces of legislation under their authority under the 14th Amendment, bringing American Indians under the jurisdiction of the United States, and in 1923, they passed a law offering citizenship to all Native Americans. So this is a precedent where Congress has passed legislation determining who is within the jurisdiction of the United States, and it is my contention that Congress could today pass legislation determining again who is within the jurisdiction of the United States, this time saying that children born of illegal aliens are not within the jurisdiction of the United States, not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. So there's precedence for such legislation. And as we currently speak, there are bills circulating in both the House and Senate purporting to do that very thing. Those bills probably will not pass, and they would certainly be vetoed by President Obama. But at least there is an attempt to pass such legislation.
So Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4, does not Congress have plenary power in this regard? You know, we talk about what will the courts do. The courts have implied judicial authority, I would argue, implied judicial review authority, I should say. But here we have an explicit grant of power to Congress, do we not?
We do. But under the 14th Amendment, Section 5, which gives Congress the power to enforce the provisions of the 14th Amendment, they have already exercised their legislative power to say who is within the jurisdiction of the United States. And I think they could just simply do that, saying children of illegal immigrants born within the boundaries of the United States are not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States.
All right, we're going to run out of time. I want to hit a few more subjects with you very quickly. What about children of diplomats? I mean, you're a diplomat, you come to the United States, you're serving, you have a child here. Under the theory of those who talk about birthright citizenship as a matter of geographic jurisdiction, wouldn't that child automatically become a United States citizen?
No, I think it was simply understood at the time that they would not be considered. By the way, Senator Howard, when he made his statement about the 14th Amendment, who would be within the jurisdiction, said diplomats would not be.
No, that's what I'm trying to underscore. So
yeah, diplomats would not be. But he also said those who are here who are aliens would not be subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. So he said very, very clearly at the beginning that aliens and children of aliens are not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. So I don't know why we just don't take the framers of the 14th Amendment at their word and stop this nonsense about all persons born within the geographical confines of the United States are automatic citizens of the United States. No country who can't determine who are to become citizens is any longer a sovereign nation. I think it's that simple. If we can't determine who are to become citizens or treat citizens differently from non-citizens, I'm sorry, we're just no longer a sovereign nation. It is that simple.
And there's really only a few countries that do this. We do it. I know Canada does. Are there any others? There can't be many.
I think Kenya still does it.
Kenya still does it?
If I'm not mistaken, yeah.
Let me ask you this. Let's make this in plain English as we can so even I can understand it. What about those who refer to common law? What does common law have to do with this as opposed to, say, constitutional or statutory law?
Yeah, a lot of people say, the people on the progressive side of the political scale say that the 14th Amendment adopted the common law standard of citizenship, which is birthright citizenship. But if you look at what the common law says...
All right, let's stop one second. What is common law?
Well, this is the law that was in force during colonial times and is still the law in force in Britain. But the common law, and Blackstone is the authority, he wrote in the mid-18th century a huge multi-volume work, commentaries on the common law of England. When he talks about birthright, he calls it subjectship. He never uses the word citizen in all of his commentaries on the common law of England. It's always birthright subjectship. And he said that the law of subjectship in England is a feudal law, feudal is a borrowing from feudal law. It is the relationship between master and servant. There is no such thing as citizenship under the common law. And what he says is, if you were born within the protection of the king, you owe allegiance forever to the king as a debt of gratitude. In other words, you can never get rid of your debt of gratitude to the king. Now, in the Declaration of Independence, we said that we are dissolving our allegiance to the king of Great Britain. We no longer owe allegiance to the king of Great Britain. Now, I submit to you, having dissolved our allegiance to the king, which, by the way, is a gross violation of the English common law, as it was understood at the time, do you think that the framers of our Constitution adopted the British common law of British birthright subjectship as the ground of our citizenship? That's too absurd for anybody to even consider.
Well, you say it's too absurd. I think I just read, I hope I'm not wrong in saying this, I think I just read a former staffer to John Cornyn, the senior senator, Republican from Texas, making that point.
Of
referring
course.
To common law, which is so absurd. Why do we even have to refer to common law?
I have no idea. James Wilson, who was a signer of the Declaration of Independence, a member of the Constitutional Convention, and later a Supreme Court Justice, said in one of his Supreme Court opinions, in America, there are citizens, but no subjects. And that is the message of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. There are citizens, but there are no subjects. But under the common law, there are only subjects. And in 1868, as a companion piece to the 14th Amendment, the same senators and congressmen who passed the 14th Amendment passed what is known as the Expatriation Act, in which they said the doctrine of the common law basis for citizenship is a feudal doctrine which we are repealing, and we are allowing people of America to repudiate their citizenship if they want to leave the country. Under the common law, it is impossible to repudiate your citizenship and to go to some other place where you think
get a better deal. So your point here is, common law has nothing to do with this. In fact, it defeats the argument because we're talking about being subjects, not citizens, if
That's
we actually adhere to common law. That's number one. Number two, as a lawyer, I can tell you, you would never have to refer to common law. We have a constitution.
That
constitution has an amendment.
Yep.
And the amendment says what it says. The history behind the amendment says what it says. And if people want to confer birthright citizenship on illegal alien children, then they have to amend the constitution, not us.
That's exactly right. You hit the nail right on the head there, Mark. And I think that encapsulates the whole thing. There used to be a doctrine of constitutional jurisprudence that said that whatever was in the common law that was contrary to the principles of the Declaration of Independence was repealed at the Revolution. And if there was anything that was contrary to the principles of the Declaration, it was the doctrine of perpetual allegiance to the King of Great Britain. And that's what the common law required with respect to birthright subjectship. That has no place in America, and it was repealed by the Declaration, and it was repealed by the 14th Amendment.
And it just amazes me. Not only progressives, Professor, use this argument of subjugation. They may not even realize it, but they're into subjugation, if you ask me. But you have Republicans making the same argument.
Yes.
Quite frankly, linking to it on some of our favorite websites. Have you noticed that?
I have noticed that, and I think it's a travesty.
It's an outrage.
It is.
Well, Professor, you've been superb. You're superb on this subject. I quoted you last night. And, Ed, it is a pleasure, and I hope you're well.
I am, and thank you for having me on your program. And I read all of your books, and I hope you produce many more.
Oh, you're very, very kind. Thank you, Professor. God bless you, and take care of yourself. Was that enlightening, Mr. Producer? Did you feel... How about Mr. Call Screener? Did he like this too? All right. I'm asking because I just want to make sure. I live this stuff, so it's easy for me to deal with, but most people don't live this stuff. But, folks, the point is, if you get anything out of this, there's simply no basis in the Constitution, in the history of the 14th Amendment. There's no basis in the American heritage for birthright citizenship for illegal aliens. And yet you will hear demagogues from both parties. You will hear surrogates on TV and on radio from both parties. You will hear them pontificate as if they know what the hell they're talking about. They don't have the foggiest idea what they're saying, or they do, and they're distorting it. Jurisdiction has nothing to do purely with the physical jurisdiction of the United States. It has to do with the allegiance to a country. Allegiance. Otherwise, half of the citizenship clause in the 14th Amendment is, as the professor said, superfluous. It's unnecessary. So then what you need to do, if you're a thinking person, is, well, what did they mean by the rest of it? And you dig, and you look, and we know. Answer found. The senator from Michigan, a Republican who authored it, Howard, said what it meant, Jacob Howard. And he said what it didn't mean. It doesn't mean foreigners and aliens and foreign ministers and diplomats and all the rest. And, of course, he pointed out Section 5 under the 14th Amendment, and I would further argue Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4 in the Constitution itself gives plenary power to Congress to confer citizenship. Not the judiciary, which uses implied judicial review, but explicit plenary power to Congress. That is, the same Congress that can actually take jurisdiction away from the Supreme Court, apart from those subject areas that are explicit in the Constitution. I know this sounds radical, but that's what it says. The same Congress that created the lower courts and the appellate courts. There are no lower courts and appellate courts in the Constitution. Congress has to create them. And Congress has the final say on this, too. Not the president, not his pen and his phone. It's under Article 1. What's Article 1 mostly relate to? Everybody. Congress. There was a host last night on our favorite cable network who yelled, "Look, Donald," meaning Trump, "look, look, look what it says. It says, if you're born here, you're an American citizen. Read it. That's what it says." That's called killing the Constitution. Yeah, there's a new book. I'll be right back.
Mark Levin.
Thank the great professor again. This issue has been resolved, if it ever needed resolution. But there's so much nonsense that comes across on TV and radio and other places. And I think we've done our job here to thoroughly address it. And this is what I do in my books. They're not hit and run. They're not aimed for the moment. They're aimed to really inform, really educate on issues that matter to all of us, so you can take those issues and demonstrate why we're right. I am not result-oriented, ladies and gentlemen. I do the scholarship. I do the digging. As you can see, Professor Erler does the same thing. Just superb. Absolutely superb. And yet you have all these commentators all over TV who don't know a damn thing, giving themselves names, a judicial analyst or a chief this, that, or the other, or the sage of conservatism or whatever it is, and they comment they don't know what the hell they're talking about. The dog days of summer are here, and I have a question. Why are you still waking up at 3 a.m. roasting, sweating, when you could be sleeping cool and comfortably on a Casper? I've told you before, we have four Casper mattresses in this house. I love them. Now, these startup guys are winning design awards, getting props for their perfectly engineered mattress you try in the comfort of your own home. Casper ships the mattress to you for free and gives you 100 nights to try it risk-free. And they'll come pick it up if you don't love it and refund you everything, no questions asked. But I seriously doubt that's going to happen. I ordered one, it's my mattress, then I ordered three more. There's no reason to test a mattress awake for 2 minutes in a store at a strip mall. Casper uses breathable latex foam that gives you all the contouring support you need. And unlike other foam mattresses, Casper keeps you cool, and they remove that stuck feeling. The Casper mattress is proudly made in the USA, that's right, in America. And by selling directly from Casper.com, there are never any middlemen to drive up the cost. Take them up on their 100-night risk-free trial. I did. Upgrade to a Casper with free shipping at Casper.com. That's Casper.com. Make sure you use my referral code, Mark, and you'll get $50 off your mattress. I am the first to bring this to Talk Radio, this magnificent product, this mattress, the magnificent service, and I'm telling you, you're going to love it. If you need a new mattress, this is where you go. If you're tired of your old mattress, this is where you go. Use my personal referral code, Mark, and get $50 off your mattress. That's code Mark for $50 off your mattress at Casper.com. Terms and conditions apply, as you would expect. Now, after this hour, we're going to leave the subject of birthright citizenship, and we're going to get back to the subject of Obama selling out the United States of America as he fundamentally transformed the world into a dangerous, dangerous place with nukes. Nukes acquired by Islamo-Nazis. The proliferation of nukes. Whatever happened to the nuclear freeze movement? Jesse, Tulsa, Oklahoma, the great KFAQ. Go.
Mr. Levin, how are you tonight, sir?
Very well, my friend. Thank you.
Awesome. I just wanted to call you and tell you just a little break in the subject matter, but I'm a soon-to-be freshman at Tulsa University starting next week, and I am finishing up plundering the seat. It's kind of sad, honestly, for my last four birthdays. I've got one of your books, and next year, with this one just coming out a couple days before my birthday, I don't know what I'm going to do. But anyway,
what you're going to do for your birthday? Well, first of all, before you go on, I'll give you a birthday gift. I'll give you a signed copy. So you bring that other copy to college and give it to somebody else, okay?
Oh, my goodness. Mr. Levin, you are the man.
Yes, I is.
That's awesome. But I'm just finishing up, and it's a phenomenal read. I actually have a good friend in mind that I can get my copy to then. He's a hardcore liberal, so I think he would... He'd be a very good person to get the book in the hands of.
Well, Jesse, I have to run. You're going to be armed like nobody else, and I really appreciate it. Don't hang up, and I wish you well in your college career, very much so. I know it's not is, it's am. I'm playing. We salute you, Jesse, Tulsa, the great KFAQ. Do not hang up. We need your address. America, I'll be right back.
He's here. Now, broadcasting from the underground command post, deep in the bowels of a hidden bunker, somewhere under the brick and steel of a nondescript building, we've once again made contact with our leader, Mark Levin.
Hello, everybody. Mark Levin here. It is hour two. Our number, 877-381-3811. 877-381-3811. Somebody asked me. Okay, great. You're on the New York Times list second week in a row. How many books have you sold? So I just went back and I asked, because I don't know exactly how many books or e-books or hardcover books have been sold. And I was told about 120,000. Well, I think that's good. It sounds good. But I'm not going to be happy till we spread this far and wide, which means most of you probably haven't acquired one yet. All we need is one per family. Share it with your kids, pair it with your family, or get them in the libraries. You don't even have to buy it and read it and talk about it and so forth and so on. But I just pass that along. If you look at the comments on Amazon under my book, you'll get a feel for what's in the book. If you look for the book reviews, we put them up for a reason. I put them up on my social sites. I also have them on marklevinshow.com. We have a full page. You'll see the reviews. You'll get a feel for it before you spend your money. And one of the things that I'm really amazed at, it's still 40% off on Amazon and so forth and so on. I don't know how long that's going to last. So the book is not $27. The book is, I don't have my calculator with me. It is 60% of $27, whatever that is. I want to get back to this. This so-called Iran deal. If you didn't hear me the first hour, this is crucially important. Remember these side deals? Remember the administration said they're secret, they can't share them with Congress, for crying out loud? Then they said, well, we can't share them with Congress because they're between the UN and the Islamo-Nazis in Tehran. I meant my words, not theirs, obviously. Oh, they're between the supreme leader and our friends at the UN. Does that sound better, you libs? Well, one of these side deals was just leaked to the Associated Press. And if you haven't heard this because you weren't around the first hour, listen to this. AP, Vienna, Iran, in an unusual arrangement, will be allowed to use its own experts to inspect a site it allegedly used to develop nuclear arms under a secret agreement with the UN agency that normally carries out the work, according to a document seen by the AP. Now, that nuclear site is the notorious Parchin nuclear site. The Parchin nuclear site. And this is part one of the side agreements worked out between the IAEA of the UN and Iran. And the United States was briefed on it. John Kerry was briefed on it. He didn't actually read the side agreement. And he endorsed it. And Obama endorsed it. Now, the Obama administration described the document earlier as nothing more than a routine technical arrangement between Iran and the UN's International Atomic Energy Agency on the particulars of inspecting that site. This is not a routine agreement. The country that is the subject of a site visit is not the country that's supposed to be doing the site visit. By the way, after we had this wonderful event at the Reagan Library, a gentleman comes up to me and says, you know, you're a brilliant guy. I love what you do on the radio. There's a lot of great guys, you know, out there doing this. But sometimes your passion is just a little too much. And I got to thinking about this. I have been told this since the day I started radio. Cool it with the passion. And yet, my friends who have succeeded in radio, a couple of them, told me, never allow anybody to change your personality. Be whom you are. The audience doesn't like fakes, they don't like phonies, and they know a fake and a phony when they hear one. So these consultants and executives, just cool it on the passion. Ladies and gentlemen, this is why we have the line, passionately cerebral. I could never work for the National Public Radio, and be one of the zombies who just reads the news and then spews liberalism while pretending that it's news. And I would never have been successful in this field at this time of the day, which is the most difficult time to be on radio, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Western, when everybody's being pulled in 1,000 directions, eating dinner, going home from work, primetime TV, endless baseball's over, then it's basketball and it's ice hockey, and even more than that. My radio affiliates make this show possible. But I'm also on Patriot 125 satellite. We also have one of the biggest, most successful apps, the Mark Levin app, in the entire industry. We're also an iHeartRadio app. We are live streamed through most of our affiliates and, of course, on the Mark Levin Show website. And millions of downloads every year on podcasting, where people decide on their own when they want to hear. So why would I change what I do, the way I do it, and who I am, when obviously that wouldn't work? And you wouldn't want it, really, would you? Anyway, I'm just mentioning that as a side point as I continue to be passionate and cerebral about what's going on in this country. So this Parchin deal, that's this notorious nuclear site in Iran, is separate. It's a so-called side agreement, and Obama and Kerry signed off on it. So in other words, the Islamo-Nazis in Iran will self-report. They will confess after they inspect themselves on whether or not they have violated the deal. Does that make sense to any of you? Who the hell enters into something like this? This isn't a deal, it's a full capitulation. The agreement diverges from normal inspection procedures between the IAEA and a member country by essentially ceding the agency's investigative authority to Iran. It allows Tehran to employ its own experts and equipment in the search for evidence, and I'll add, that Iran is violating the rules. Now, have you ever heard anything so stupid in your life? How can any member of the United States Congress who cares about the United States of America, how can any member of the United States Congress who cares about the future security of this nation sign off on such an absurdity? And why is it even a close call? Got this idiot Tim Kaine here in Virginia. You got two idiots in California, Boxer and Feinstein, a.k.a. Frankenfeinstein. This jerk Cardin over here in Maryland still sitting on his pencil, can't figure out what the hell he wants to do. I don't know. Loyalty to my country, loyalty to Obama. Oh, it's so difficult. What shall I do? That's the great moral choice for the left. Loyalty to Obama, a complete and utter fraud, or loyalty to their country. And for them, it's a close call. And for many of them, they side with Obama. Oh, by the way, a couple more by the ways. On Sunday, obviously, I was busy at the Reagan Library, but I understand on our favorite cable network, Chris Wallace, an anchor there of the Sunday show, was really beating up on Ben Cardin for calling Obama and his policies anti-Semitic. Ben Carson, what did I say? Yeah, Ben Carson. Ben Carson, a man I admire enormously. I guess my question to Mr. Wallace would be, how can you not look at Obama, how he's conducted his presidency, that is, look at his record, the things he has said, the way he's treated the prime minister of Israel, the things he has done, and not conclude that he's an anti-Semite? Why do these reporters and hosts, the pseudos among them, why do they feel the need to defend Obama on every front? You can explore why Ben Carson would say that, or others. But a full-throated defense? Well, you apparently think your goal is to defend the president from such slurs. Even liberal outlets are starting to point out the kind of language he uses in promoting his policies and how they're anti-Semitic. But no, we can't do that. All the kooks are on the Republican side. All the nuts are conservatives, right? Oh, we're nativists, and we're xenophobes, and we have racism in our DNA. All of us, the entire American population. Let me continue. The White House has denied claims by critics that a secret side deal favorable to Tehran exists. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has said the Parchin document is like other routine arrangements between the agents. This guy's such a liar. This guy is a fraud, this Kerry. It's a routine arrangement. What do you mean it's a routine arrangement? That the enemy gets to investigate the enemy? The enemy gets to decide if it's building nuclear weapons and violating the deal or not? What are you talking about, Kerry? You clown. It's like other routine arrangements between the agency and individual IAEA member nations. It's like nothing we've ever seen before, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing. Our president is lawless. His administration is lawless. And let me add this now. Congress is lawless. Why is Congress lawless? Because Congress has surrendered power it doesn't have the right to surrender. The Constitution doesn't belong to any one Congress or Congress, period. The Constitution is the law of the land. Mitch McConnell and John Boehner cannot surrender it or any part of it. Oops, there goes my passion again. I'll be right back.
Mark Levin.
Did John Kerry commit perjury in his testimony in Congress? Did John Kerry commit perjury? Didn't he say, Mr. Producer, there were no side deals? I'm starting to wonder if the man committed perjury. We're going to take a look. We're going to go back. I don't mean to put Mr. Producer on the spot. We'll see if we can find it today. But let me be the first to raise this so we can get the ball rolling on this, as I got the ball rolling in defense of this notion that, yes, you can get rid of birthright citizenship prospectively, as we get the ball rolling on so much here. But let me introduce this into the echo chamber. Then whisper down the lane. Did John Kerry commit perjury? We know there was a side deal. And we know that the United States signed off on it. We know the United States signed off on it. We know why they tried to cover it up. Because it is a disaster. And I wonder if it'll change a single mind of a single Democrat who has announced that they're going to vote for this deal, quote unquote, even though they didn't know that this part of it existed. You watch what a bunch of fanatics populate the leadership of the Democrat Party in Congress. You watch. And so the question is whether John Kerry committed perjury and denied this side deal. This is the best we could do. Now, this is the best John Kerry could do. This is the best Barack Obama could do. It's not the best we could do. And notice all the silence. Notice we hear nothing from Obama. He's on his vacation, boy, and he doesn't want to be heard from. He's available 24/7. No, he's not. No, he's not. He's not available at all. The EPA is busy polluting our rivers. Not a word. Man doesn't say a damn thing. Not a thing. Let's take some calls, shall we? Yes, we can. Let us go to Patrick, Savannah, Georgia, on the Mark Levin app. How are you, Patrick?
Hey, doing great, Mark. Love the show.
Thank you.
I had a question for you in regards to the Iran deal. Putting your lawyer hat on for a second, if there's three deals floating around there, they can't all be the same of detail and substance. If there's a dispute of subject matter, which deal supersedes which?
I have no idea, because other than what's leaked out, I don't even know what's in the other deal, the third one, the third
right,
side deal.
They can't all be the same, so you'd imagine. How do you solve that dispute? Because there's
I'm not sure there is a dispute. It's just all in one, a capitulation. So the UN knows what's in the other side deal. They've agreed to it. And they agreed to this side deal where, in essence, the Iranians would self-report on their own violations. A brilliant move. And in terms of the rest of the deal, giving the Islamos over $100 billion to arm themselves even further and so forth and so on, I'm not sure there's any contradiction. Just look at it as a three pieces of a capitulation.
All right.
Patrick, don't hang up. I'm going to send you a copy of Plunder and Deceit, a signed copy, and I appreciate you calling. Let's go to Ron, Baltimore, Maryland, the great WCBM country, home to my buddy Tom Maher, among others. Go.
Thank you. Okay, please straighten me out on this. Suppose you have...
My pleasure.
An illegal alien couple have a baby in an American hospital, and the hospital authorities look at it and say, oh, they're abusing the baby. They call in Child Protective Services. Child Protective Services comes in, takes the baby away. On that basis, it would seem the baby is subject to the jurisdiction of those authorities. Where am I wrong?
Yeah, you're not. They're subject to the legal jurisdiction of those authorities. It doesn't make the person a citizen. What does that have to do with anything?
Well,
if you're hold on, pay attention. If you're traveling in the United States and you're a foreigner, you're subject to the laws of the United States too.
Right.
So that doesn't make you a citizen.
Okay, so I guess this is a matter of the common meaning.
Let's say you come to the United States on a student visa or on an entertainment visa or on a teaching visa or on some other visa, and you come into the United States, you're still subject to our laws. Doesn't make you a citizen. You go to Great Britain and you go as a tourist, you're subject to their laws too. Doesn't make you a citizen. So what does one have to do with the other?
Well, the language of the Constitution would seem to say it, that...
Didn't I already explain to you the language of the Constitution? Why do you insist on twisting it?
Well, I'm trying to get straight on it.
When it talks about jurisdiction, I had the professor on, I've explained it two nights in a row, you're not trying to get straight on it. It means allegiance to the country. That is, you can't be from another country, come into this country, have a child, and then say, hey, we're citizens because we're in the United States of America. That's not what was meant when the 14th Amendment was drawn up and adopted. What was meant was you have to have allegiance to the country, and the author of that aspect of the amendment specifically said it does not include foreigners and aliens. Where is the ambiguity?
I'm just being misled by the common meaning.
You're not being misled by the common meaning because you don't understand the purpose of those words. Just because people keep repeating them doesn't make it the common meaning. It's a myth. It's a fallacy. And you want to be led by myth and fallacy. That's the way liberals are. I'll be right back.
Mark Levin, Liberty's General Patton. Call into the Mark Levin Show now at 877-381-3811.
As I understand it, Hillary Rotten Clinton first had a server on her property in Westchester, New York, Chappaqua. Then the server wound up in New Jersey with a company that apparently was managing it or overseeing it and so forth. Then the information was transferred to a smaller company or another company out west. I believe it was Denver, but check me on that. With a server that was reportedly in a restroom, in a bathroom. So basically, we have an unsecured server with the information floating all around the internet and the enemy having multiple occasions to tap into it. And no doubt it did. This would be the same enemy, among others, that tapped into 40 million personnel files, or is it 20 million? I've lost count, of federal employees, for which there still haven't been any answers from this administration. I don't know where these federal employee unions are, but they ought to be jumping up and down to protect their members. I said early on, it's been repeated since, that Hillary Clinton has revealed, no doubt in my mind, more classified information or more sensitive information than Edward Snowden. Certainly the potential exists. Should he return, he would be tried for treason. Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, wants to be the nominee of the Democrat Party for President of the United States. A little odd, don't you think? I want to know where the United States Attorney is for the District of Columbia. I want to know why the United States Attorney for the District of Columbia has not impaneled a grand jury to investigate this. This is becoming a wider and wider scandal, involving more and more individuals, more and more companies, and more emails. This investigation should not be conducted out of the back pocket of the Attorney General of the United States. Where's the U.S. Attorney and where's the grand jury? We had a grand jury chasing the hapless Karl Rove for several years. We had a grand jury chasing the Honorable Scooter Libby for several years. Where's this grand jury? And there's even more. There's even more. From Politico, of all places. Josh Gerstein. State Department, Mills and Abedin official BlackBerries are likely gone. Ooh. BlackBerry devices the State Department issued to former Glad I didn't misspeak. Hillary Clinton aides Cheryl Mills and Huma Abedin have likely been destroyed or sold off as surplus, a state official said in a court filing Wednesday. The Secretary of State's Information Technology Office, quote, believes that Ms. Mills and Ms. Abedin were each issued BlackBerry devices. says State Executive Secretary Joseph McManus. This is in a declaration in federal court in a Judicial Watch lawsuit. My hat tip to Tom Fitton over there. The office, referred to as SESIRM in agency parlance, quote, has not located any such device at the department, and standard procedure upon return of such devices is to perform a factory reset, which removes any user settings or configurations, and then to reissue the device to another employee to destroy it or to access it, he added, access it, whatever the hell that means. Because the devices issued to Mills and Abedin would not have been, would have been outdated models in accordance with standard operating procedures, those devices would have been destroyed or accessed. They're excess. As stated above, the state.gov email accounts themselves are generally housed in the department's servers. In any event, now we have the missing text messages. We had the missing emails. We had the private secret server. We have the release of potentially classified information over the internet, unprotected, from one unprotected server to another unprotected server. This is all government information. You may have heard Hillary Rodham Clinton earlier to say that these private emails, she didn't turn over her private emails. Let me explain something to you as a matter of law. If you use government property to produce what you think are private emails, those private emails are not private emails. They're government property. You did it on government time. You did it on government equipment. It's government property. And you don't get to decide with your criminal defense hack, slip and fall lawyer, David Kendall, who is attached to the Clintons' hip for the rest of their lives, I guess. He doesn't get to decide for the American people or the federal government what is or is not private. Now, I want to know why, and should be fairly routine, there is not a grand jury and panel by the U.S. attorney in Washington, D.C. to investigate this. That needs to be done, and it needs to be done now, and every piece of potential evidence and hardware and technology, if it hasn't been secured, it must be secured, and immediately. And people need to be questioned immediately before they start changing their stories and working their stories together. This needs to be done fast, super fast, like Superfly. Let me tell you about Harry's Razors. I love Harry's Razors. Say goodbye to trips to the drugstore just to pick up some razors. Harry's is giving new customers an additional $5 off their first monthly subscription order with my coupon code LEVIN, L-E-V-I-N. With Harry's.com, you don't need to overpay at the drugstore for quality razor blades. Shipping is free, and the blades go from their German factory straight to your door. Harry's Shave Plan is a monthly subscription that sends razors to your door for as little as $3 a month. You want to see how you look with a beard? Okay, don't worry. Harry's has your scruff covered. You can cancel or modify your plan at any time. Your first Shave Plan order includes a free handle, and they're beautiful. Harry's is so confident you'll love their German-engineered blades, they're giving a 100% satisfaction guarantee. So start your Harry's monthly subscription. Never worry about buying blades again. As a special offer for you new customers out there, get your free razor and save $5 off and your first subscription with my code LEVIN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code LEVIN. Start shaving better today. harrys.com, code LEVIN. We've covered a lot, and we have a lot more to cover. The Center for Medical Progress, this organization deserves the Medal of Freedom. This organization, this private entity, has done more to expose the slaughterhouse that is Planned Parenthood than any entity. Where are the federal investigators? Where are the federal auditors? Where's the FDA? Where's HHS? Where are all these places that pretend to seek to protect the American people? Do they know this slaughterhouse is in existence, Planned Parenthood? Well, they know now. Since when did the butchery of human babies become a right? It's a choice, you know. No, it's not a choice. the third episode in a new documentary web series and seventh video on Planned Parenthood's supply of aborted fetal tissues tells a former procurement technician's harrowing story of harvesting an intact brain from a late-term male fetus whose heart was still beating after the abortion. Does it get any sicker than this, this Mengele-like activity? The Human Capital documentary web series, produced by the Center for Medical Progress, integrates expert interviews, eyewitness accounts, and so forth and so on. O'Donnell describes the harvesting or procurement of organs from a nearly intact late-term fetus aborted at Planned Parenthood Mar-Montes Alameda Clinic in San Jose, California. Hey, Hillary Rotten Clinton, may I ask you a question? Is this a war on women or what, Hillary? What do you think about this, Hillary? You got a problem with this? How come you don't talk to this? How come when the pro-life Republicans running for office talk about defunding Planned Parenthood, you call this a war on women? I call this stopping the Mengele-like activity of this detestable, grotesque organization that you keep championing. Ladies and gentlemen, there's no way Hillary Clinton should get away with this. She's endorsing this organization. Let me ask you a question, folks. If you endorse an organization like this, aren't you endorsing these practices? These aren't one-offs. This is a pattern. This is routine. So this series focuses on the personal narrative of Holly O'Donnell. She's a former blood and tissue procurement technician for Stem Express. That's that biotech startup company that last week said, we're not dealing with Planned Parenthood anymore. So she describes the harvesting, or as they call it, procurement of organs from a nearly intact late-term fetus aborted at Planned Parenthood Mar-Montes Alameda Clinic in San Jose. In other words, a viable human baby. Let's get rid of the phony terms. A viable human baby. Quote, I want to see something kind of cool, O'Donnell says her supervisor asked her. And she just taps the heart. And it starts beating. And I'm sitting here and I'm looking at this fetus and its heart is beating. And I don't know what to think. You're not looking at a fetus, you're looking at a baby. Think about that. The San Jose Planned Parenthood does abortions. Let's just stop a second. Are you thinking this through, ladies and gentlemen? You have that image in your head. Her supervisor, she taps the heart of the baby, and the heart starts beating. She taps the heart of the baby, and the heart starts beating. How can anybody defend any of this? And you and I are paying for this. You and I are subsidizing this. The San Jose Planned Parenthood does abortions up to 20 weeks of pregnancy. Referring to the beating heart of the aborted fetus, I'm reading as it's written, O'Donnell remarks, I don't know if that constitutes it's technically dead or it's alive. O'Donnell also tells how her Stem Express supervisor instructed her to cut through the face of the fetus in order to get to the brain. She gave me the scissors and told me that I had to cut down the middle of the face. I can't even describe what that feels like. The video also features recordings of Dr. Ben Van Handel, the executive director of Novogenics Laboratories, and also of Perrin Larton, procurement manager of Advanced Bioscience Resources. Doesn't it sound all so clean and pure and professional? Novogenics is the company that has harvested fetal organs from abortions done by Planned Parenthood Federation of America's Senior Director of Senior Services, Dr. Deborah Nakatola. Remember her? In Los Angeles. Van Handel admits, quote, this is on the video, I take it, there are times when after the procedure is done, the heart actually is still beating. And she describes abortion she has seen where, quote, the fetus was already in the vaginal canal. Whenever we put her in the stirrups, it just fell out. Unquote. This is a slaughterhouse. This Planned Parenthood operation is a slaughterhouse. It is slaughtering human beings. We don't treat anything this way. Let me go even further, not to be provocative. Planned Parenthood is the ISIS for babies in this country. This brave group with these brave people, the Center for Medical Progress, which is under attack, which is under legal assault by the usual suspects. Look what they've exposed. They're underfunded. They have limited resources. A handful of people. Look what they've exposed doing what they do. Imagine what's really going on. Imagine the extent of it. Imagine the extent of it. Oh, look at this. Tap the heart. It's still bleeding. It's still breathing. Look at this. It's moving. Oh, that's very cool. Look at that. Look, everybody. Now, take the scissors. Cut down the middle of the face. Just cut it down because we need to get to the brain. We need the brain intact. Are you kidding me?
Mark Levin.
You know, what you read and how you think about what you read largely determines what and who you will become. Reading and understanding great fiction is one of the glories of the human soul. In doing so, we engage in a conversation about the most important questions which shapes our minds and deepens our souls. Truly great fiction can enrich our lives, especially when we read guided by those who have made the time to really study what the authors are meaning to convey. The new, free online course from Hillsdale College features discussions about some of the greatest books of all time. You can register now, always for free, at levinforhillsdale.com. That's L-E-V-I-N for Hillsdale.com. And watch the lectures when you want, and then decide which books you want to read. Think about what you're reading, what your kids are reading. And then head over to levinforhillsdale.com. Take a few seconds to register for the free Hillsdale course, and see if you might want to read a few books that can enrich your life. Beautiful, wonderful, fiction. Register now, as always, for free and for a limited time at levinforhillsdale.com. That's levinforhillsdale.com. All right, let us go to Eddie in Texas, a truck driver, Sirius Satellite. Go.
Hello?
Yes, sir, go.
Great one. Do not, whatever you do, dumb it down none. You get on them harder and harder, buddy. I'm back to you 100%.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
As far as the deal, so-called deal with Iran, it's not a deal, Mark. We surrendered. We let them just surrender us.
We surrendered, Eddie, and Obama thinks this is a legacy builder. It is a legacy builder for the most outrageous, destructive president, if not ever, certainly in modern times. Don't you agree?
I 100%.
All right, Eddie. Well, listen, don't hang up. I want to give you a copy of Plunder and Deceit, signed. Number one, New York Times nonfiction, 2 weeks in a row. I mentioned that to drive the libs nuts. Because, as you folks know, I don't write it for the New York Times. I don't even know who they are. They despise me, and the feeling is mutual. Scott, Green Lane, Pennsylvania, the great WNTP. Go quickly.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
All right.
I got to go back to what you said earlier in the show about your passion, and that the fellow, the general or whatever, said that he was concerned about your passion.
Not a general, just a gentleman.
A gentleman. I'm sorry, I misunderstood. I got to tell you, without that passion, we wouldn't have Men in Black, Liberty and Tyranny, Ameritopia, plunder and deceit. That's why you are right up there with Ronald Reagan in my book.
Oh, jeez. You know what? You're very, very kind. I know I'm not, but I really, really appreciate your kind words. Scott, don't hang up. You get your signed copy of Plunder and Deceit. I don't know where these 2 hours went. We only have one left. I hope you'll stick with me, and I'll be right back.
He's here. Now, broadcasting from the underground command post, deep in the bowels of a hidden bunker, somewhere under the brick and steel of a nondescript building, we've once again made contact with our leader, Mark Levin.
Hello, everybody. Mark Levin here. Our number, 877-381-3811, 877-381-3811. Reminder, a little less than 2 hours from now, if you're listening live, I will be on Hannity TV on the Fox News Channel, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. I hope you can join us. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm raring to go. Also, earlier today, I had a wonderful interview with the Christian Broadcasting Network's 700 Club, David Brody. David Brody is a great reporter. And they came to the bunker and they interviewed me about the book, Plunder and Deceit. I'll let you know when that airs. Probably next week sometime, but I don't know. They're going to let me know. But hat tip to them. They've always been very kind to me. So I want to thank them. I want to thank all the wonderful radio hosts who have interviewed me throughout the last 2 weeks and more to come. Wonderful radio stations. I've got great affiliates. I don't say that enough. And I want to thank all the program directors and general managers and the people that make the decision about content. I want to thank you all. It's a great honor to be on your stations and on your airwaves. And they could not be kinder. They really couldn't. They're very supportive. And they really want, you know, to make their stations work for you. So you'll listen to them and remember to listen to them. And there are certain national hosts who've been very supportive, including my dear friend Sean Hannity. And there's others, too. I just can't remember everybody at the tip of my tongue and all the wonderful book reviews. Thank you again. But most of all, I want to thank you and my audience. I wouldn't be on the radio but for you. And my books wouldn't be read but for you. And so I know when I labor weekends and nighttime and I do it for a year or 16 months and go through all the material and put it together, I know that many, many of you are going to be very interested. And again, I want to thank you. I believe the single most important criminal statute that endangers Hillary Clinton is Section 793 of the Federal Penal Code. And I mentioned this to you several weeks ago, and I want to reiterate this, that this is a very, very serious matter, her mistreatment and mishandling of classified information. And you know what? There's a lot of important information that's not classified. That doesn't belong to Hillary either. That belongs to the federal government. That is, we the people. The reason there's a Freedom of Information Act, ladies and gentlemen, is so you or organizations that you support or organizations you may not support can gain access to material that's not classified so we can find out what our government's doing. And the truth is, this administration has been operated like a police state. It is the most difficult to penetrate to get information from. My group, Landmark Legal Foundation, we have several lawsuits going right now against several departments of the federal government. And, of course, we just finished a major lawsuit against the Environmental Protection Agency, where if it couldn't conceal information, it destroyed information. They just paid a big penalty, which is fine, but that means the taxpayers are paying it. People need to start going to jail for this. There needs to be a grand jury impaneled in Washington, D.C., once and for all, and Hillary Clinton needs to be pulled in front of it and needs to testify without her lawyer, The way we had a grand jury in Washington, D.C. hanging around forever trying to destroy Scooter Libby, an honest man who hadn't leaked a damn thing. And, of course, they were chasing Karl Rove all over the place, too. I am definitely no fan of that guy. I don't like him in the least. But he was done a grave injustice, by that prosecutor and that grand jury. No question about it. Section 793 of the Federal Penal Code, the U.S. Code, Section F. Whoever being entrusted with or having lawful possession or control of any document, and it goes on to describe it in the broadest terms what a document is, or information relating to the national defense. Subsection 1. Through gross negligence. Not specific intent. Gross negligence. Permits the same to be removed from its proper place of custody or delivered to anyone in violation of his trust, or to be lost, stolen, abstracted, or destroyed, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both. Let me repeat. Through gross negligence permits the same, that is, this classified information, to be removed from its proper place of custody. And I would contend, as I did weeks ago, that bringing that server onto her private property was removing all the information on that server and all the information that would be on that server, removing it from its proper place. Somebody also ordered the information from that server, which was then moved to New Jersey, to be transferred via the internet, likely, to another server, reportedly in a bathroom, in, I believe, Denver or someplace. Well, that's the improper transfer, the negligent, gross negligent transfer of potentially classified information from one place to another. There's so many possible violations of federal criminal statutes, including this one in particular. It is incredible to me that we don't have a grand jury looking into this. And now the two Bobbsey twins, two of Hillary Clinton's closest confidants. Well, you know, their texts, they're missing. You know, their cell phones were old, and, you know, we get rid of those things. We got rid of them? Oh, yes, we did. This is why the failure, or the refusal, more correctly, of the Department of Injustice, under the first fake attorney general, now under this fake attorney general, while they're busy nationalizing police departments, while they're busy accusing everybody of racism, while they're busy shaking down companies, while they're busy doing what they're not supposed to be doing, they're not doing what they are supposed to be doing. Let me pose a question to you. Can a candidate running for office continue to run for office if they're indicted? We should start asking these questions. And the answer is yes. Yes. Can a candidate, excuse me, who's indicted and then gets elected as president of the United States, then there's a trial, let's say they're convicted and they're sentenced, can they remain president of the United States in federal prison? Answer is no. They can't. They can't do their responsibilities from federal prison. And presumably, even a Republican Congress at that point would get the nerve to impeach somebody like that and remove them from office. Well, the war on women. War on women. I don't know about that one. But in any event, so the answer to that is no. So that would be considered, in my view, a disability. That would mean the vice president steps in. So these questions need to be asked, because if we had a real Justice Department rather than the Injustice Department, if we had a U.S. attorney who wasn't sleeping at the switch there in Washington, D.C., but whom would wake the hell up and impanel a grand jury, maybe that would work. And what really is supposed to go on in a situation like this, we have a Justice Department that has demonstrated it is incapable of doing its job, its real job, and apparently a U.S. attorney who's demonstrated he's incapable of doing his job. What would normally happen here, there'd be enough pressure built by the media for the appointment of a special prosecutor. That's what happens with Republican presidents. There'd be enough pressure from the media. The media would be leading this. The media would be questioning. The media would be on the charge. But we get the opposite. We have, as I've said, a Praetorian Guard media. They encircle the president. They encircle the president's top people, and they protect them. And so we get questions like Chris Wallace trying to beat up on Ben Carson. What do you mean Obama's anti-Semitic? That's a pretty harsh word there. I mean, what do you mean? Can't call him that. You have any evidence? Yeah, there's evidence everywhere. Google it. Ask your 4,000 researchers to find it. There's no question about it. In my humble opinion. James, Fort Worth, Texas, the great WBAP. How may I help you?
Hey, Mark, long-time listener. I just would like to mention one thing, and I'm sure you know it, but I haven't heard it. When Hillary's making a statement in July, she made a number of them, but quite a few sound bites about her saying, I never had confidential information. She went on to say, and I've
never had
anybody
classified.
Really
hold on now. Hold on. Never had classified information.
Well, yes, she said, I never had it, but she said, and I know the difference. Mm-hmm. And she said that very clearly, and I think that's important. She is saying she knows the difference. Well, I mean, let the facts
look, she's been caught in several lies already. She said that classified information was never on that server. Where would you know that's not true?
But then,
let me ask you a question. Thousands and thousands of emails... Who went through all that to determine, by the way, what was and was not in those emails? Her lawyer? Is her lawyer read into the black ops programs? That's what we used to call them. Is her lawyer read into top secret clearances? I'd like to know, is David Kendall among others, who else looked at these emails before Congress could see them?
There's no telling how many people saw them. But I just was real interested when she was very emphatic saying, I know the difference in what's classified and what's not. Well, you must have missed something, is all I can say.
You're darn right. Now, shouldn't she be testifying under oath in front of a grand jury?
Amen.
Who cares what she says publicly? We know she's a liar. Got decades of evidence for that. Thank you for your call, my friend. I'll be right back.
Mark Levin.
Baby. Better phase it out. I learned something interesting today. I didn't know. Little inside baseball for you folks there. We are rated on most stations, or many stations anyway, through a process that's called PPM. I'm not going to bore you with the detail or dig into the weeds. But it is now my understanding that unless I'm talking nonstop, the meter drops. So if I play music, or if I take a long pause, and so forth and so on, the meter rates it as your ratings going down, even though your ratings aren't going down. The whole system is screwed up, to be quite frank about it. Ooh, am I allowed to say that? Who cares? Say it anyway. Let's take some more calls. We have a lot on the table here. Quorum, Chattanooga, Tennessee, Sirius Satellite. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Mark. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
I am 19 years old. I haven't listened to you very long, and I'm about to go into the U.S. Army. I just want to let you know I sent a couple emails to Bob Corker and Chuck Fleischman and then Senator Alexander telling him my concerns about the Iran deal. Basically, what I'm worried about is I'll fight the war. You know, whatever's about to come, I'll fight it. I just do not want it to be on our soil.
Mm-hmm. Let me say a few things. Number one, you sound much older than your years. And what I mean by that is very mature, very articulate, very thoughtful. That's number one. Number two, I want to thank you on behalf of the country, a 19-year-old, and because it's 19-year-olds and 18-year-olds and 20 and 25-year-olds who are going overseas to deal with the enemy. And so it is guys like you and your generation that I try to defend, because people write you guys off, not you in particular, but your generation. I want people to know we have an all-voluntary military, and Corm, you're volunteering for the military, correct?
Absolutely.
That's number two. Number three, just know that you have a nation behind you, regardless of the commander-in-chief, okay?
Good to know.
And I'm going to send you, there's really nothing else I can do. I want to send you a signed copy of Plunder and Deceit. Maybe it'll be interesting to you at some point as you're serving, and I want to thank you.
I really appreciate that, and thank you for arming me with the knowledge I need to deal with some of my peers.
Well, God bless you, and you take care. Wow, he sounds like, gosh, he's just terrific, isn't he? Yeah, we have a lot of wonderful young men and women. We really do, and they don't get the credit that they deserve, in my opinion. Let's go to Robert, San Francisco, California, the great KSFO. Go!
Hey, Mark, good to talk to you. Keep up the good fight, huh?
Thank you.
As far as this criminal activity with Hillary Clinton, this almost takes me back to, I was sitting on hold. It made me think of while her and Bill were back in the governor's office back in Arkansas, it took me back to a documentary that was made sometime back, and it was called The Clinton Chronicles, which kind of correlated a lot of the criminal activity that was going on back then while they were both in the governor's mansion. And today's current activity that she is throwing out there in the people's faces, I mean, it's like she's almost like the Joker in a way, how she can get out in front of people and talk about this Snapchat, and that she can get away with it because her criminal activity is going to be erased and it's not going to be brought up in front of her. And it's just so blatant in our faces. And she's almost at the same level, as far as I'm concerned, as like Petraeus, what he got for his criminal activity, or even Snowden when it comes down to it. I categorize her in that type of a level of criminal activity as far as the Clintons go. It's just absolutely disgusting.
Well, at a minimum, you agree with me. There needs to be a grand jury and panel, and they need to get to the bottom of this.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And meanwhile, people keep flailing around. Let me tell you, they're hoping to get through the presidential election to get her elected, and then she'll put the kibosh on the whole thing.
You know, I think if she gets the book thrown at her, maybe it'll have a slowdown effect on some of this other criminal activity that we have going on in government today. At some point in time, Mark, we've just got to have somebody put the brakes on.
I agree. I don't know how both Clintons have managed to stay out of federal prison. I said months ago that she should be in an orange jumpsuit in the federal prison, and so should he. And I mean it. It's no joke. What they've done with, among other things, what they've done with their phony foundation, how they laundered money through it, in my humble opinion, how there were quid pro quos all over the place. That was another one. Where's the evidence? What do you mean, where's the evidence? We're swimming in the evidence. Thank you for your call, my friend. There's evidence everywhere. I mean, people are going to prison for all kinds of stuff in this country. Oh, round them up. But the Clintons, nothing. Ever. It's like the Kennedys, quite frankly. Ted Kennedy. Ted Kennedy should have been serving a long time. You know, the Lion of the Senate. Oh, the Lion of the Senate. What he got away with. And so forth and so on. And look, also, look what the... I won't get into that. I'll just get into trouble. Okay, pull back. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be right back.
America's passionately cerebral voice. Talk with that voice now. 877-381-3811.
The IRS is in full swing. If you owe back taxes, they're not going to stop until they've collected everything you owe, whether it's your paycheck, bank account, even a lien on your home or business. There's no reason to take these guys on by yourself. Call the experts I trust at Optima Tax Relief. Write the number down. Here it is, 800-499-6300, 800-499-6300. Optima has the power to protect you from aggressive collection actions now so the IRS can't take your assets. And when you call, ask about the tax debt forgiveness program that's saving people's lives, even tens of thousands of dollars they save. Now, what do I mean by saving people's lives? Well, the IRS can destroy you. The IRS can ruin you. I just read they helped the truck driver from California settle a $60,000 debt for $5,000. They have so many five-star reviews because these guys are the best. One quick call is all it takes to get started on resolving your tax debt. Optima Tax Relief has an A rating. An A rating with the Better Business Bureau offers a one-of-a-kind money-back guarantee. Don't wait until it's too late. Call Optima now for your free consultation. Here's the number. 800-499-6300. 800-499-6300. That's 800-499-6300. Let's take a call, shall we? Let us go to Chris, Columbus, Ohio, Sirius Satellite. Go!
Hey, first of all, thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I just recently read an interview with Hillary. I believe it was in Iowa. And she was being questioned about wiping the server, obviously. And I believe it was Ed Henry of Fox News asked her if she had wiped it.
Yes, we played that yesterday. In fact, we played it the first yesterday. Yeah, she said, you mean with a cloth? Yeah, I know. This is how seriously she takes it.
I could only think of the arrogance of this woman to be asked a serious question in the 21st century when she's got a computer for a phone. She knows what wiped means. That, what she said translated to me that I'm untouchable and I know you can't do anything about this.
Mm-hmm.
And it just put me in a fury that she is being questioned by almost everybody in the nation except for her circle around her about what's going on with this email. You're running for president. We're going to have to trust you with this. And she goes, do you mean I wiped it with a cloth?
Well, isn't the bigger problem that that law enforcement is obviously being held back? Law enforcement's not corrupt. The top echelon, the political appointees, they're corrupt. They are special pleaders for Hillary and all the Democrats and liberals and so forth, except this guy Menendez, of course, because he opposes Obama and Iran, among other things. But all that said, the bigger problem we have here is federal law enforcement that's being held back. There should be a federal grand jury. They should be investigating her, her aides, these various server companies. They should be tracking everything down. They should be securing everything that moves and doesn't move. And yet this isn't apparently happening. Thank you for your call, sir. Let's continue, shall we? Kerry, Movado, California, the great KSFO. How are you?
Oh, fine. It's incredible to speak to you, Mark. I've listened to you for years.
Thank you.
And I wanted to say, talking about all the Planned Parenthood abortions, and they talk about 20-week gestation. When I'm a nurse. When I worked with newborn ICUs, premature babies, we always, when there was a woman that was 20 weeks gestation, you know, in development of a baby,
right,
we automatically treated it as if it was 24 weeks. So in case there was a mistake on the dates. So if someone was going into labor and she was 20 weeks, we would pretend, you know, assume that it could be a 24-weeker that's actually being born. And 24 weeks, they are usually pretty viable. There are a lot of 18 and 20-year-olds in college and running around in the world that were at 24 weeks gestation, and some even at 23 and a half weeks. So when they're saying, oh, they're doing abortions on 20-weekers, it's a very big, you know, there is a chance that a lot of them are actually 24-weekers, and that's more like murder because that's a viable human being.
You know what? They obviously do not care. I mean, let's just look at the condo. These videos have caught one incredible event after another. And if you have a supervisor touching the heart of a baby, an aborted baby, and like, watch how it moves, watch how it moves. In another case, telling the assistant to go ahead and cut down the front of the face to access the... I mean, who can do this?
I mean, when I saw them born at 24 weeks, you know, we would...
They're babies!
...everything for them, and they would feel pain. We would try to have to get blood and things to check their glucose and their oxygen and carbon dioxide. And they would be crying even though they were on a ventilator, but they were in pain. It really affected them. They feel everything at 24 weeks. And even I worked with some 23 and a half week babies, too. And they feel pain.
So let me ask you a question. The left always pretends to embrace science, and yet they never embrace science. When it comes to climate change, global warming, global cooling, they reject science. They say, stop debating it. Stop giving us information. It is what it is, because they're fanatics. They're ideologues. And here they reject science again. Science demonstrates more and more to us that these are babies. That these are babies. Science demonstrates more and more to us that they feel pain. They feel pain in the womb.
They do.
And yet it doesn't change the narrative. It doesn't change the position of the Hillary Clintons, the Barack Obamas, the Harry Reids, the Nancy Pelosis. Nothing. Nothing. Nothing moves them.
I've heard you say this a while back, but for the liberals, if you want to get rid of it, it's an abortion. If you kill it, it's murder. You know, if you wanted to have, if somebody wanted to have a baby and something happens to it, then it, you know, it's like horrible and it's murder. Or, you know, if a car accident and a baby, the woman is pregnant and the baby dies, that's murder.
The bottom line is the left's position on this is not only inhumane, it's clearly illogical.
Had a little help with the abortion, and the liberals,
all right.
The liberals all think of it as, well, they want to get
rid
of it.
All right, Terry, I got it. I appreciate it. Thank you for your call, and thank you for what you do. Let's continue. Sean, Wichita, Kansas, the great KNSS. How are you?
I'm fine, Mr. Great One. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank
you. I had a couple of comments. First of all, I wanted to say that while you were serving under Ronald Reagan, so was I. He was my greatest commander-in-chief. He was
How
great.
About that? Yes, he was, and thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I like both Bushes. They were good commanders-in-chief. The two worst ones were Clinton and Obama.
But yeah, they
anyway,
were and are.
Anyway, first of all, I wanted to say, as far as Hillary Clinton goes and this thing with her server and classified emails, there's not a doubt in my mind she's going to get away with it. In this life, she'll get away with it. I have no mm-hmm. doubt about that. I just don't see how she could be prosecuted.
Well, what if we elect a Republican president? Do you think she'll still get away with it?
Well, it depends on who gets elected. I mean, there are several people that I like, but I'm not picking anyone right now. It's too early in the process.
Well, you make a good point. A lot of them might say, move on, forget about it, let's move along.
I'm sure Jeb Bush would definitely do that if he got elected. But,
and Kasich would be another one.
Yeah. But there are others that I like Ted Cruz and Donald Trump and Ben Carson. And I think I would probably even vote for Carly Fiorina if she got nominated, you know.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, I just don't see her getting into any kind of I don't see her getting into any trouble at all, other than over this thing, other than the fact that I do believe she's not going to be the next president of the United States. That's for sure.
All right, my friend, thank you for your service, much appreciated. Let's slip another call in if we can. Charlie, Abingdon, Virginia, Sirius Satellite. Go.
The Great One, thank you so very much.
Thank
you. Good to talk to you again. This thing with Hillary Clinton and her email server, I consider myself to be above average intelligence. and I'm also a pastor, so I have a well-defined sense of right and wrong. But there's two things that really puzzle me about this. First of all, even a cursory glance at the U.S. Code covering this issue, even just a cursory glance, brings to mind how in the world can what she has done be considered anything other than criminal. Humor, as she has tried to use in the last few interviews, is widely seen, even by the most liberal of psychologists, is seen as a deflection. So that puzzles me. But here, this is the greatest one, and you nailed it before I even really gave a thought to it, but you're exactly right. Why in the world has not a federal grand jury been convened to investigate this, to explore the criminality involved? Because she is, and as a caller earlier mentioned, the arrogance of, even though she's not in an elected position, the arrogance of quote-unquote power, just really...
Let me just tell you this, my friend. The reason why is because over at the Injustice Department, I was chief of staff to an attorney general in the Justice Department under Edwin Meese and Ronald Reagan. But today it's the Injustice Department. And over there at the Injustice Department, here's what they know. They know if they convene a federal grand jury that they take it essentially out of the control of the Justice Department. They also know that it could be a dire consequence for the Democrat Party in this presidential election. This is what they know. Now, I hear everybody saying that Barack Obama wants Joe Biden to run. I think that's true, too. But I also think that if you have a presidential candidate with the name ID of a Hillary Clinton, you are going to turn off a lot of Democrats and a lot of supporters to any Democrat nominee. So they're walking a fine line over there. And one thing they're not considering, sir, is justice. That is justice. That is what should be done on behalf of the American people. They're never thinking about that.
Well, if she does not, if there are no serious repercussions, then the federal government owes, as you mentioned, Scooter Libby, and they owe David Petraeus a massive apology and a pardon.
Well, that's another thing I brought up when this thing first broke, Petraeus. I mean, they didn't have to do that to Petraeus. Did he do something wrong? Yes. Did he wind up turning over classified information to the enemy? No. Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, the concern is that the enemy did intercept her information. Anyway, thank you, Pastor. Hey, Pastor, don't hang up. I'm going to give you a signed copy of Plunder and Deceit, and I'll be right back.
Mark Levin.
Don't blame me. My buddy Melech. This is his favorite song, so I play this by request. All right, better kill it before everybody drives off the road. You know, despite its glitz and glamour, Washington, D.C. is actually a pretty boring place. It's the same parties every year, mostly packed with liberals who pat each other on the back all night long. Then there's the Media Research Center's annual gala and Dishonors Awards. I've been to this event several times, including last year when I received the William F. Buckley Award, and I can tell you this is really a great night. It's different. The venue is incredible. The cuisine is 5-star. The show is laugh-out-loud funny. And the best part is, there aren't any liberals around to annoy you. This is a conservative event with over 1,000 conservative patriots attending. And the show parodies the Oscars as conservative leaders present and accept awards on behalf of the biggest clowns in the liberal media. Now, you can see for yourself what the MRC's gala is all about, and reserve your seat at mrc.org/gala. mrc.org/gala. Now, if you mention my name, Mark, at checkout, you'll get $100 off each ticket. This is a great deal. It's an enormous amount of fun. you'll meet some of the great conservatives in the movement, and you'll meet some other people, and you'll make lifelong relationships. Seriously. So, mention my name, Mark, at checkout, and you'll get $100 off each ticket. The gala will take place on Thursday, October 8th, in Washington, D.C., at the National Building Museum. So don't miss it, folks. It's one of the events worth attending in Washington, D.C. That's mrc.org/gala, mrc.org/gala. Mention my name, Mark, at checkout. You'll get $100 off each and every ticket. And you're going to have, trust me, a tremendous time. And it is tremendous. Let us go to, Diana, Tulsa, Oklahoma, the great KFAQ. Go.
Hi, Mark. Great to talk to you. I just wanted to mention on the Iran deal that it's so frustrating to continually hear what Washington, specifically the executive branch of our government, is doing in secret, not allowing us to have any information as to what our country is going, is going into agreements with another country who has over the history of the last 50 years or whatever.
This is why I have been pounding the GOP. They let us down. The whole purpose of the treaty process, Diana, is so the whole country can know what arrangements are being made in relationship to our country and other countries, particularly enemies like this. And so by not following the Constitution and the treaty provision, Bob Corker, Mitch McConnell, Lamar Alexander, Lindsey Graham, and all the rest, other than Tom Cotton, sold us down the river. Now they're trying to claw their way back and get information and hold hearings and hold votes. It's not the same. If you need two-thirds of the senators present to get a treaty, then the president would have to be more forthcoming in what's going on, or he's not going to get his treaty. Here, he circumvented a Senate that was willingly circumvented, ran to the UN Security Council. Now they're playing games in Washington, D.C. over this thing. We've got these side agreements which undermine everything that Kerry and Obama have said.
It's so highly disappointing of our government. It's utterly disgusting. I'm just very, very frustrated and I get to the point where I just want to, kind of like your passion, you just get so frustrated. And I wanted also, just the last thing, to tell you that don't ever, ever change, Mark. Your passion, listening to you gets my passion going, and I understand how frustrating it is and everything. And I love your passion. Don't ever give it up for anybody, and don't ever let anybody tell you any different.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that, Diana. Let me fire off a Plunder in Deceit book to you as well. Really appreciate that. Now, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, in a little over an hour from now, Hannity TV on the Fox News channel. I will be there at 10 p.m. Eastern time, a little over an hour from now. I hope you'll join us. Also, Amazon.com, the number one New York Times bestseller. I say it because they hate it. Plunder and Deceit, 2 weeks in a row. Check it out. I think you'll like it. I think your family will like it. Ladies and gentlemen, we salute our armed forces, police officers, firefighters, and emergency personnel. And I salute you, my beloved audience. Thank you very much, and I'll see you tomorrow. I'm Mark Levin.